I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. For the fifth year now, around this time of year, just before Christmas, I get to talk to the great Mike McArdle. It might be an overstatement to call him great, but it's not. He happens to have a book out around this time, but he's always welcome on this program. He's a marvelous storyteller, seen at the end of Global's NewsHour. He's out now with his seventh book, again, a wonderful collection of stories we've seen on television, as well as anecdotes he's collected over his many years of reporting, meeting the colorful, interesting, fascinating people throughout this city and its environs. The book is called Here's Mike and Junkyard Granny, Whistling Bernie Smith, The Robertson Screwdriver, Pancakes, and Eternal Truth. It's from Harbor Publishing, and if you buy the book before the 29th of February 2012, partial proceeds will go to Variety, the children's charity. These books of Mike, all bestsellers, have raised over $75,000 for Variety. GlobalTVBC.com is the website for Mike's pieces. Please welcome back to the Planta on the Line program, Mike McArdle. Good morning, Mr. McArdle.
Good morning, and it is an overstatement. I am not great. The only thing that is great about this is the money that's gone to the Variety Club.
Indeed.
So if you hear this, go buy a book, and you don't even have to read it. Just go buy it and consider yourself helping kids.
But someone who has read them and who enjoys them is Judy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I saw these pieces on TV when the book came out a couple months ago. How did you know about Judy?
I didn't. Just what I said in the in the dedication is all. I was buying a bottle of wine in the liquor store on Broadway near Renfrew, and this sweet young girl says, "When am I going to write another book?" And I says, "Never."
Yeah.
Finished with writing books because I don't believe anybody reads them, and also, I'm running out of ink. And she said, her mother had read them all, and her mother had breast cancer, and her mother got great comfort from them. And I'm saying, oh, darn. Yeah. Not darn that her mother had done that, just that, I'm saying, I'm not writing a book, and her mother wants another book, and there's a lineup behind me, and, a liquor store lineup. They can't wait to get out
right.
So they can have their vodka, like me, except I don't drink vodka.
Yeah.
And I said, she's giving me my change, and I'm saying, okay, I'll write another book. That's where the decision came, and I'll put your mother's name in it. So she starts crying, which is very sweet. And then there's this other clerk next at the next cash register says, Angie, Angie, is this guy bothering you? I'll get him thrown out. And she says, no, they're tears of happiness. And the lineup behind me is getting longer. And I get my change, and she says, thanks or thank you or something. And I start walking away. I think, I can't write a book just stick somebody's name in it. So I think, okay, I'll write a book and dedicate it to her. And I went back and told her that, the lineup's getting longer.
Yeah.
Anyhow, I left and I went home and I said, better not open this wine. You got to write a book. So I did, and then it came out, and I was just going to quietly give it to this girl in the liquor store. And I'm with a cameraman named Dave McKay, who he's in a bunch of books. He's a barbecue chef and takes pictures on the side.
Yeah.
He says, no, we gotta document this. And I said, no, it's a private thing. He says, we have to. Okay, so he follows me into the store. I give it. She cries some more, and then says her mother is having another operation. Oh, bummer.
Yeah.
So we put that went on television on Thanksgiving Day, and that was really nice. And that would be the end of the story, except Saturday, last week, I was in a bookstore in White Rock signing books, and I looked up, and she says, hello. It's a nice woman. She says, my name's Judy.
Wow.
And I think, who's Judy? <It's> not, no, I know. I just didn't put it together.
Yeah.
Just mind-numbing. And I said, hello, I'm pleased to meet you. And she says again, no, I'm Judy. And then, like a baseball bat through
right.
the eyeballs.
Yeah.
Oh, you're Judy?
Yeah.
Not just Judy, you're Judy.
Yeah.
And so there were more tears and hugs. And I introduced her to everyone in line. And I made everybody read the dedication before I would sign their book.
Really, yeah.
And she was embarrassed, and then she left, and that was the best Christmas present I'm going to get this year.
Yeah, how is she now?
She's fine, but this is the second time she's had cancer, and, you know, it's the second time. That's how is she? She's fine, and, you know, and we'll leave it with that. I'm sure she's going to be okay.
Yeah.
And I hope she is.
Yeah. Now, we had Howard White on the program a couple weeks ago,
uh-huh.
and we were chatting about, you know, the books that Harbor puts out, and I read somewhere that this book is a national bestseller.
Which, this current book?
Yeah.
He
said that, it's doing well, not only here, but outside of B.C. And I'm wondering...
Mind if I know that.
Yeah. Well, I read that on one of these bestseller lists, and it was a national bestseller list. And so I saw it there, you know, with Peter Newman's book and you know, the Wade Davis's book. And it surprised me because, I was wondering, do people watch you outside of this province?
No, not at all. No, outside of, you cross past Fernie.
Yeah.
You know where Fernie is?
Right.
It's, you know, you can stretch your legs out and get to the border. Two stretches, and they haven't got a clue who I am.
Yeah.
So it's selling just, I guess, because for whatever reason, maybe the cover that Howard and his folks designed.
Yeah, and we paid you a compliment saying that you know you're a pretty good writer, and that you are. I mean, you know, you having read all of your books now, you know, you started as a writer, right?
No, I started as an illiterate teenager. You know that when you read the books,
but no,
I'm illiterate.
But in the Sun, you worked at the Sun, right?
Oh, I worked in newspapers for 15 years before that. I got my first union card from the newspaper guild. It's 1962, and so I got that when I was in the mailroom of a newspaper in New York, and then I worked worked my way up to being a police reporter from. From messenger to a different kind of messenger.
Yeah. So when you're narrating your pieces for the NewsHour, are those written out in advance, or are you just talking into a mic in the truck?
I'm basically the only one who just picks up the microphone. This is not bragging. I mean, it's just that if I start writing, everything comes out backwards. I'm still sort of... people say I'm dyslexic. I have no idea, but I know when I write... two or three words, I'm not sure which one is going to be down on the paper first. Paper, that's how old I am. And the inside letters are mixed up, and when I'm reading, they used to say to me, the editors, just read what you have. And I said, I can't read what I have. So I sort of look at the pictures and when I talk.
Yeah, and so when you're writing this book and putting this together...
I close my eyes.
Yeah, and as a storyteller, is that the same thing as when you're narrating a piece for TV?
Yeah, a lot of people say writing is way different than talking, but that's the problem with writing, I think. That's what makes writing really difficult. People... I'm trying to generalize now. But when they write something, it sounds more formal or more stiff. And if folks wrote just the same way they talk, everyone would be a bestseller.
Yeah, I think people would read more, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just writing is, you know, just the symbolic putting down of what you're saying. But then people apparently try to make the symbols more official and complicated and whatever.
Say, how
is that getting confusing?
Yeah,
what did I just say? Do you have any clue?
I have no idea. I was going to ask about Harold. How is Harold?
I had I had coffee with him this morning.
Oh, really?
It's his 94th birthday tomorrow.
Wow.
And that's December 22nd for whenever anybody hears this.
Yeah.
And I had a little party for him. My wife and I had a party for him on Sunday, and... I made a big birthday card, and I wrote 93. And somebody came in and said, I think he just said he's going to be 94. Bummer!
Yeah.
So this gigantic card has got scratched out 93 and a 4 above it, and he's fine. He's 94. He still met me and another friend named Gunther at Tim Hortons this morning, and we had coffee and we talked and joke, and then he goes home and cooks his own meals.
Yeah.
Drives his car. Gave up a motorcycle 4 years ago now.
Yeah.
He still reads. He meets me and he has a stack of magazines that of stuff he wants to refer to. Astronomy.
Oh, really?
Nuclear physics. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, I don't have a clue what you're talking about, Harold. And he's way, way smarter than me. And then he occasionally, like a couple, two or three times a month, he drives out to Boundary Bay to visit another person. And he drives fine. He uses a walker now, but he's fine.
Yeah, it's people like Harold that we've read about in your books,
mm-hmm.
that we remember, and in this new book you talk about Joe Filipponi,
mm-hmm.
and I guess what happened a couple weeks ago, the penthouse
caught fire. Got a fire in it.
Yeah, how did you? I guess you were working at the Sun at the time. Is that how you got to know him?
Oh yeah. Well, that's when he was battling the police, and I was still a police reporter, and they wanted to shut him down, and he wanted to stay open, and they accused him of living off prostitution, and in a technical way, he was. I mean, he charged the prostitutes the $2 cover charge to go into the nightclub, like he charged everybody, and then these sweet ladies would meet somebody inside, go outside, and earn a little bit more money, and then come back and have to pay $2 again, because everybody who, there was no entry and re-entry then. And that was technical enough to get him closed up for living off the avails. And but anyhow, he and I just started writing police stories, and I talked and talked and talked more and more to him, and we wound up being friends. I count it as a friendship, because at least once a week, like I meet Harold now, at least once a week I would have coffee with Joe Filipponi and sit up in his penthouse, which is only on the second floor of the club, and he would tell me about the old days, which, you know, you meet anybody older, you listen to the old days, and that's the best stories in history in the world.
And there's a wonderful story that you tell in the book about taking your kids down to the penthouse,
oh,
right?
Yeah, that was the coolest thing. We had a good relationship, there was one time when he was not going to have a strip show, it was some country and western or something like that, and he asked me, he told me if I wanted to bring my wife and kids down there, that it's fine, it's great. So, you know, amazing thing for, they were about 8, 9, 10, somewhere around there, and to go into the penthouse, oh my gosh, you know, that was the den of sin and evil. And my wife was a little cautious and afraid, but so there's a long lineup outside, and Joe can see down the end of the street with a bunch of curved mirrors that he has outside, and so he comes waddling down the stairs. He always looked like he was 5'1" both ways, sideways and tall, and he always wore a striped shirt with a checkered jacket and a flowery tie. I mean, this guy was not out of GQ,
yeah.
And he's walking down the street, waddles down the street, and people are holding their hands out, touch me, Joe, because he was like the godfather then, and he gets to the end of the line, and he takes my kids by the hand, we walk past everybody, goes into the, right to the middle of the floor in the penthouse, and raises his fingers like out of the godfather, snaps his fingers, and a table appears right there. And then he puts a towel over his arm, and he asks my kids what they want to order. And they both say chocolate milkshakes and hamburgers. So I can see him. Now, I didn't see this. I just know it happened. He walks over to the kitchen, and he says, I want 2 burgers and 2 chocolate milkshakes. And I can see this guy, whoever he is or was, saying, we don't have chocolate milkshakes. This is a penthouse. I want 2 shakes now. So this poor guy would have been running up and down Seymour Street, basically screaming to all of his friends, I got to find some chocolate milkshakes. And there must have been terror in his life. But somehow or other, in a short time later, he came back, and Joe Filippone, the godfather of the city then, with a tray, two shakes and two hamburgers, and a towel over his arm, served my kids.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, wow.
Yeah.
You don't get that in an ordinary life.
No, you don't, no.
And a couple of months later, he was murdered.
Yeah, yeah. When you started out in TV doing these pieces, I mean, we've already mentioned that you were in print and then you moved into television.
Mm-hmm.
Was there someone, and I mean, you were, I guess, a straight-up reporter before you started doing these pieces at the end of the show. Was there someone that you emulated in terms of I mean, there wasn't anyone doing what you're doing now, right?
No, no.
I mean,
some people say Charles Corral.
Corral, yeah.
He was a wonderful reporter. And he was on the road constantly, and the two quirkiest things about Charles Corral, he was a real good reporter, doing very neat stories about people building roads to nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I read his biography, and the only thing he left out of it was that one of the reasons he was always on the road was he had two entire separate families.
Exactly.
He had one in the Midwest and one on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And, well, it's a good thing to stay on the road then.
when you're, like, people that are their fans.
But, I didn't emulate, I don't want to say I didn't emulate. I liked a lot of nice writers, you know, who were writing columns of, I liked anybody who would tell a good story, but I sort of made it up myself.
Yeah. I'm sure you hear from viewers who like the work that you do, fans of yours. I mean, I watch your pieces on the website. I mean, I watch five or six of them at a time, and it's very difficult to not feel. I give what's the Yiddish word for klempt? You know, you get teary. People, I'm sure, who watch your pieces think the same. Do you yourself? I mean. Do you feel a little twinge of, I guess,
sad?
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, I'm not making up any of the emotions. I don't make up any of the words or the things, you know. It's just that somebody does something. I was telling somebody this sort of the same question that I was having coffee with a while ago without overdoing it. Somebody makes me laugh, I laugh. Somebody makes me cry, I cry. I don't actually cry, but I sure feel bad inside, and I always figure a smile, you know, it may not laugh, but a smile is sometimes harder than a laugh.
At Christmas, I mean, that's this weekend. Is that a big deal at your house?
Oh, yeah. I got grandchildren.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Christmas has always been the biggest holiday of our family's year, of course.
Yeah. And so you have the family over, you guys have a big dinner?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I've asked you this before, but what are you doing at 6 o'clock when we're watching the news hour? Are you watching yourself? Or
no.
No.
No. I'm usually you know, starting to cook dinner or driving home or picking up my wife from work, and I know what the story is. And no, I don't watch myself. My wife doesn't watch. And
But do you watch it before you... how does it work? I guess you send it in?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
all
yeah,
that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know what the story is. I go into an edit room with 10 or so minutes of, it's no longer even tape. I started in film, then it went to tape, now it's on some chip.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is so, it's smaller than your pinky fingernail. And the big problem they have now is losing these things, because they have to put them in a much bigger box so that we, transporting them, don't drop them. I work with an editor, and I say I'm going to start with the outside picture of the house, and why don't you pick a good picture? And he picks a picture, and it depends on whether it's an old, wrinkled guy like me, and I say, of course, that's a brilliant choice, or somebody young and who's learning, and I say, well, perhaps if you use that picture over there, you would get a better view, and it works that way. And I listen to the interviews, and literally I watch the editor, and if the editor smiles or has a reaction, bingo, the heck with anything I'm thinking, that's the clip that we will use.
What do you so you're out most of the day filming and the sort. Where do you eat lunch?
I don't. I mean, I've never. A couple of people have asked, "Can I have lunch?" No, I haven't had lunch in 35 or 40 years. I eat lunch in my car. I make a sandwich in the morning or boiled egg or something.
Yeah.
And after I finish working, driving back to the TV station or driving to one of the remote trucks, I eat while I drive, and my daughter will say, no, I haven't got a single shirt that doesn't have a stain in the front of it.
I've always enjoyed talking to you, Mike, and I love these books, and this new one is no exception. It's just a wonderful book. It's been delightful talking again. Happy Christmas, and all
you.
The best for the new year.
And Merry Christmas, and thank you to you and to everyone who listens, and I wish you all really good stuff.
Thank you. The book is called Here's Mike and Junkyard Granny, Whistling Bernie Smith, The Robertson Screwdriver Pancakes, and Eternal Truth. It's from Harbor Publishing. GlobalTVBC.com is the website for more. Mike McArdle on the line from North Van in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.